Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response B'tei for the 7th of Av. This is going to be Rav Moshe Feinstein. I'm putting up a mezuzah for a non-Jew. Thank you very much for joining us. And it's from Igrot Moshe Yeridea, the Aleph, the first time he had Yeridea Tshuvot. Kuf Pei Dalet 184 is from the 7th of Av on Tafshin Yud Tet of 1959. She was written to Rav Ephraim Grinblatt, with whom Rav Moshe had many, many correspondences, and they were often in touch about halachic issues. And here the question was, a certain non-Jew rented an apartment from a Jew, and he wanted the Jew to put up a mezuzah on the doorpost. Happens to be the Ramah in Yeridea, Reish Tzadi Aleph, 291. Sif Bet says that we're only allowed to do that. Right, he says you are allowed to put up a mezuzah for a non-Jew, but only the way the Ramah says it is. B'makom di'ikal amechash mishum eva. There's a problem of eva, of hatred, that the non-Jew will hate the Jew if he refuses. V'sheyera mishum zel Yisrael. And that the non, it seems like and, we'll come back to that vav. Moshe Feinstein, we'll come back to that vav in a couple of minutes. But sheyera mishum zel Yisrael, that the non-Jew will also try to damage the non-Jew. So Rabbi Greenblatt was writing the question to Rav Moshe, or spoke to Rav Moshe about it, and then Rav Moshe wrote it up, was wondered if the fact that the non-Jew would leave the apartment, would no longer rent it from him, does that loss of profit qualify as the non-Jew looking to hurt the Jew? Meaning, Rabbi Greenblatt's assumption is that the prohibition applies unless both factors come into play. The non-Jew will have eva for the Jew, the non-Jew will have hatred for the Jew, and second, will cause him damage. Rabbi Greenblatt wants to know if leaving the apartment in a huff and being upset and also no longer paying rent qualifies to fill both of the Ramah's conditions, or that would just be like a loss of an opportunity, a loss of a profit, and therefore it's not considered the non-Jew damaging the Jew, and therefore you would not be allowed to put up the mezuzah. In his response, Rabbi Feinstein says that he thinks that there's two different factors here, and the Ramah would permit putting up the mezuzah for either of them. To get there, he has to parse each of those, and he has to talk about what the prohibition is to put up a mezuzah for a non-Jew, and why it would or wouldn't be allowed. So, he says that eva, hatred, is even where is a problem and a halakhic issue, even where there's no immediate worry that the non-Jew will do anything to damage the Jew. The problem with eva, in other words, he's saying the halakhic problem of eva, that non-Jews might come to dislike Jews or hate Jews, is not connected to an immediate fear that they will damage us or cause us problems or hurt us. Right. You could have imagined that the halakha would say, well, when there's eva, since that will lead for that to them to do X, we therefore don't want to even cause the eva. The Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to try to demonstrate that he's going to demonstrate his opinion that that's not true, that eva is considered a halakhic problem of its own, and that Chazal permitted certain things, certain activities that ordinarily would be prohibited, as long as we wanted even just to avoid eva. And then separately, if the non-Jew would damage the Jew, even if there would be no particular hatred for the Jew, but he'll cause him problems. In other words, let's say the non-Jew understands the Jewish law doesn't allow, let's say he were to accept the idea, the Jewish law doesn't allow putting up mezuzahs for a non-Jew, but he would damage him in some way. Meaning, let's say the government would say, we understand and we're not upset with you, but we confiscate all apartments that discriminate on these grounds. So that wouldn't be an eva problem. It would be a damage problem. So if Moshe thinks that's a separate reason to allow putting up a mezuzah for a non-Jew. We have not yet spoken about why it should be prohibited. We'll get to that. But Rav Moshe thinks the Ramah is separate. And the way to read the Ramah, he says, is that there's two kinds of vavs. What the Ramah had said was that there's mutah materia. The Ramah says, the ikal amecha mishum eva. And then he writes, v'sheyera mishum zel Yisrael. The usual read of Ravav is to say, and. And that would require both of them. But Rav Moshe points out that there are vavs that are actually vavs that mean or, and separates them as two separate things, right? That's always the question of what the connector does. So the letter vav can perform either function, and Rav Moshe is saying here, he thinks it's an or, and it's a vav that indicates the Hebrew word the English word or. One of his first reason to think that he says is that if you look later on in your, if you look in your there kuf mem chet, not later on, but if you look in your there kuf mem chet 148:12. So the other Ramah says that we, our custom is to have, do business with non-Jews, even be meidehen, even on their non-Jewish holidays, which the, in the Ramah's time were assumed to be similar holidays to those that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says we're not allowed to do business with them, on which we're not allowed to do business with them. So if in the time of the Gemara they had certain holidays, in the time of the Ramah they had different holidays, but the Ramah's time assumed that those holidays qualified as what's called Yimei Edehem, as holidays on which the halacha in the Gemara was we weren't supposed to do business with them. And the Ramah writes that we do business with them on such days in his time because of Eva, because of the hatred that would be caused, and he doesn't add, and that, and we're worried that they're going to cause damage or problems for Jews. So there, from there it seems to Ramosha that it's clear that even just the fact of Eva is a problem, even if there's no immediate worry that they're going to causes problems because of it or damage because of it. And here Moshe says, and obviously the issue of Eva is that somewhere down the road it will lead to them hurting us or not dealing well with us or maybe even danger for the Jewish people. So whatever it is, but the Eva in and of itself is a problem even if there would be no immediate reaction. That's what he's trying to prove. And that's why also he says we are allowed to help non-Jews have children even on Shabbos, even though by theoretical halacha one could imagine saying, for reasons that we can't get into now, but one could imagine saying that we're only allowed to help Jewish people give birth on Shabbos. But since, and the Gemara seems to say that in any case where we could convincingly explain to them why we're not able to help them give birth on Shabbos, they wouldn't hate us for it, then we wouldn't give birth to them, help them give birth on Shabbos. That means that when we commonly today practice that we do help non-Jews give birth on Shabbos, and Rav Moshe has other tshuvot about this very issue and how doctors do and don't practice medicine on Shabbat, in all cases where we do give them, help them give birth, that's because of Eva alone. It's not because we're worried that they will immediately respond by damaging us or hurting us. It's because of the worry about Eva. And Eva, so therefore, Eva in and of itself, the hatred that might be caused in and of itself is sufficient that we are allowing certain halakhic permissibilities because of it. So we allow certain halakhic issues that we ordinarily wouldn't have allowed, we do. Having established that the two ways in which non-Jews can have problems with us, one in which they want to immediately damage us because of what we've done to them or what they perceive that we've done to them, and the other way where they just have hatred for us, but that does not have any immediate consequences, but we have every reason to believe and to assume that it will have consequences down the road, Ramosha says there's a distinction between those two as well, because if it's just that he's going to hate us and maybe down the road would try to damage us, but it's not going to immediately try to damage us. He thinks that even though that allows being Mechal Shabbos, right? We say you can give medical care to non-Jews just to avoid Eva on Shabbos, even though ordinarily we wouldn't allow to violate Shabbos. Rav Moshe thinks that that would not be sufficient to allow violating an Isur De'oraita, a Torah prohibition. Now, just before we go on with this, our discussion here won't be about specifics of medical care and stuff like that. Rav Moshe has other tshuvot about that. So what he would do about medical care in terms of Isurim D'oraita, I think there he thinks that, I think he ends up thinking that in his time, if we didn't give full medical care, even by violating Torah law, that wouldn't just cause ordinary Eva, it might cause immediate reactions and things like that, and therefore he does allow it. But here he's saying that when it comes to Eva, he thinks that would only permit Isurim D'rabbanan, it would only permit violations of rabbinic law, because it's like, and this is an interesting analogy, it's like adding another mazik to the world, adding another source of danger, another source of damage to the world. And when it comes to avoiding the adding of another source of damage or danger to the world, he thinks that it's, we're only allowed to violate rabbinic prohibitions because of that, because when Chazal made those prohibitions, they might have allowed us to violate them in order to avoid adding new mazikim to the world, adding new sources of damage or danger to the world. But there is no reason to think that we can violate biblical prohibitions in order to avoid that as well. And he points to a Magen Mishnah in Hilchos Shabbos who claims, who understands the Rambam to hold, that when we say it's Pikuach Nefesh to avoid certain animals or to kill certain animals on Shabbos if they're coming, if they're a threat to us. Let's say there's a rampaging lion. It's clear that we're allowed to kill a rampaging lion on Shabbos to avoid being damaged or hurt or killed by the lion. Killed is the worry, that kill a lion will kill things. The Magen Mishnah says, but clearly the Rambam doesn't think that one could take weapons and go hunting on Shabbos for these kinds of animals because they're damaging, dangerous kinds of animals, right? Let's say there's outside of town, there's lots of snakes. So you couldn't decide to go on Shabbos on a snake hunt for the purpose of protecting yourselves. The Magen Mishnah points out that with these sources of damages, once they've appeared as a threat to life, that's when we're allowed to violate Shabbat, right? And not only that, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, even during the week, he points out, even during the week, there's no obligation to go searching for these animals, try to kill them and try to destroy them, because they're not immediate dangers right now. So therefore, Moshe Feinstein says that the prohibition to the ability to avoid certain dangers is only once those dangers have appeared as actual dangers, right? So it's also true, he says, for example, there's no prohibition against helping lions or bears, however this would happen, give birth. Nobody ever says, well, you're adding a new cause of danger in the world. The answer is they're not an immediate danger. They're not an actual danger until they become a danger. And therefore, when it comes to Eiva with non-Jews, if the only problem is that the non-Jews will end up having dislike for us or being upset with us for some practice of ours, so there too, it could down the road become a problem for Jews, and therefore we have to worry about it, but it's not the kind of thing that allows us to violate Shabbat or violate things. But when it comes to Yisurim D'Rabbanan, rabbinic prohibitions, so there, when Chazal instituted the prohibitions, they allowed us to violate them in order to avoid the Eiva, to not allow new hatred of Jews to come into the world. And that might be, he says, because especially when it's a human a person who's going to have the Eiva, if they decide to make a plan or a plot to hurt us, we can't always know how to avoid it. But Rav Moshe, here in this tshuva at least, sees no reason to say that that allows violating Yisurim D'Oraita. But if the Eiva, if the hatred is going to cause actual immediate attempts by the non-Jew to take revenge on us, that would be like the source of danger is running after us. So if the lion is chasing somebody, there clearly you're allowed to violate Shabbat, violate the Torah in order to remove the threat of the danger, even in a Torah-prohibited way. And all the more so if a person is running after us that we would have, who wants to take revenge, who is upset with us, that we are allowed to do it. And therefore, it would be true that anything that we might do that would cause a non-Jew to immediately want to take revenge against us, so let's say I decide, or Jews decide, they cannot stop the flames from burning a non-Jew's house because it's Shabbat, and putting out a fire in Shabbat is a violation of Shabbat. Or let's suppose that a Jewish midwife, today it would be an obstetrician, would decide not to help a non-Jewish woman give birth on Shabbos, and it's a situation where the non-Jews wouldn't believe our reasoning. If we said to them, listen, we're very sorry, we really would love to help you, but it's Shabbos today, we give them the whole story, and they're not going to buy any of it. And if that happens, so then immediately they would decide to take revenge on us, right? It would only take one time when a Jewish doctor would, by refusing to treat a non-Jew, and some terrible consequence happened to the non-Jew, that there would be immediate consequence for the Jewish people. So in those situations, that would be like creating an immediate danger of vengeance, and there is like pikuach nefesh. There's like saving Jewish lives, and therefore we're allowed to violate Shabbat on a Torah level because of these situations. So to me, I think that's a very interesting distinction worth pausing on that Rav Moshe is pointing out. He's saying there's a difference between immediate danger and far-off danger. When it comes to far-off danger, we're allowed to violate Shabbat in rabbinic ways, but when it comes to immediate danger, we're allowed to violate Shabbat in d'oraita ways. And the distinction for how we treat other people would be, if we're going to cause them to be annoyed with us, but that's it, as far as we can tell. So that would be the kind of thing he says would be like a far-off danger, and therefore we might be allowed to violate rabbinic prohibitions, but there's no evidence that we'd be allowed to violate Torah prohibitions. But when it comes to immediate dangers, and his examples are pungent ones, one time that a Jew ignores a flame in a non-Jew's house and it burns down, that non-Jew is going to try to take revenge because he's just lost his house. Or God forbid, even worse, a close relative has passed away because a Jewish doctor has refused to treat a non-Jew, and they're not going to buy this legal distinction. Well, halakhically, we think that it's not going to fly. And therefore, that creates an immediate danger of revenge. And there, we're allowed to violate even Torah prohibitions. This is a distinction. This is not Rav Moshe Feinstein talking, and I know it's a response, but Dan's supposed to just listen to the responsa. But I just point out, it becomes an important distinction that people lose sight of as well in discussions of Rodef, in discussions of when we see somebody else as a threat to human life. So in the worst application of it that I remember, when Yigal Amir killed Yitzhak Rabin as a Rodef, we accepted everything that he claimed about Yitzhak Rabin, and I'm not saying that we should, but the Radifa, the threat, was a farther off threat than one that allowed, that would seem to allow having an immediate reaction that would violate the Torah prohibition. Rav Moshe Feinstein here is making that very important distinction, that when we're looking at threats that are being created, there's a difference in how we're allowed to halakhically violate the Torah to prevent threats between a threat that is immediate or a threat that is far off. And so now back to Rav Moshe Feinstein's discussion. Anything that causes hatred or dislike, so not doing business with them on their holidays, even though it could eventually cause a life-threatening problem, they're only allowed to rabbanans and not to oraisas. This is an example. An example that he gives is Chasam Sofer has a tshuva in which he says that when it comes to cutting the umbilical cord after giving birth, and cutting the umbilical cord is a malacha d'oraita, is a Torah, is a violation of Shabbat on a Torah level if it doesn't have a valid reason for it. So there he says, if there's a non-Jewish midwife there, so the situation seems to be that there was a Jewish midwife who was handling the main birth, and there's sort of an apprentice midwife who's not Jewish, and it's a non-Jewish baby, it's a non-Jewish mother giving birth. So the Jewish midwife, helps with the whole birth. But then, the Chasam Sofer says, when it comes to after the birth has already happened, have the non-Jew cut the umbilical cord. The Chasam Sofer felt in his time that wouldn't lead to any Eva because the non-Jew wouldn't really care. Even though the non-Jew would know that when it came to a Jewish birth, the chief midwife would have been the one to cut the umbilical cord, that distinction might annoy him. He might say, oh, look at them, they think they're too good for us to cut our umbilical cords. But that's as far as it would go, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem. And that would not be allowed, violating a Torah prohibition of Shabbat. But if the Eva comes with a chashash, zakanash nefasho, if we're worried that the really cause the problems for us. So let's say there was no non-Jew there, right? And the Jewish midwife just saying, well, we can't cut up the umbilical cord yet. Let's find a non-Jew to cut the umbilical cord. They start looking around. So if the non-Jew is afraid that until they find the non-Jewish midwife or whoever it is to cut the umbilical cord, that its wife or the child will have a problem. So therefore, there the Jewish midwife could cut the umbilical cord herself, because that would be like an immediate danger. So that's a source for Moshe's idea of the difference between immediate danger and far-off danger, what it permits and what it doesn't permit in terms of violating the Torah. So now, coming back to our mezuzah question, we have to figure out now, what is putting up a mezuzah? What kind of a violation of the Torah is it that led Ramah to say that we don't do it other than when there's Ramah said, where there's Eva, and then he had a Vav, Eva, which we would have thought meant and, that they'll try to damage us. So Rav Moshe is going to try to say, I can show you that the Vav means or, because if we figure out what the prohibition is, we'll see that there's no way to read it as and. So what's the prohibition? So that's what his next question. What is the prohibition? The source, by the way, is the Maharil. So if Rav Moshe says it's an Issa Dorais, it's a Torah prohibition, it would have to be that you need both conditions. But if it's Drabanan, then we could say that either one, that even just the causing of hatred would be enough. And therefore, he says, he thinks you might have thought it was a d'oraita because of the worry of bizayon kitvei kodesh. We're worried, maybe, we would say, that the non-Jew will not treat the Torah, the mezuzah, the writing of the parshiot, the sections of the Torah that goes into a mezuzah, that scroll, that we don't know that the non-Jew will treat it with the proper respect. And therefore, it's bizarre kidrei kodesh. That would be a Torah prohibition. And then you'd have to say that you need both factors because just ordinary hatred wouldn't be enough to allow it. Rav Moshe finds that a problematic suggestion because, first of all, the Ramah should have said it, and he doesn't. And then more than that is because if it's true that that's the worry, then it's no novel idea. Why is it a novel idea? Because it's just an example of the fact that we're not allowed to engineer situations of Bizayon and Kitvei HaKodesh. We're not allowed to be partners to, or accessories to, or catalysts to the mistreatment of sacred writings. And if that's true, there's nothing particularly new about it. That was well known. And yet, if you read the Rabbah, Rav Moshe says, if you read the Rabbah, it sounds like he's telling you a new idea that Ma'aril came up with, and he should have said it, explained it better, and he should have given a better understanding for it. And there, because he says something like Nireli, that's what he says. He says Nireli, and that sounds like it's a new idea. And therefore, Rav Moshe thinks that there is no Torah prohibition. The reason there is no Torah prohibition is that he says you don't really have to immediately be worried that the non-Jew will mistreat the Kitvei Kodesh, the writings in the mezuzah, the scrolls of the mezuzah. The reason you don't have to really worry about that is because he wants it to put on his door, and he thinks that on its door it will guard him in some way. Right? It's sort of the superstitious version of the mezuzah. But if he thinks that it will guard him, then you have every reason to think that he'll treat it respectfully. So why is it that we don't put up mezuzahs for non-Jews? Rav Moshe thinks that the fundamental answer is that we don't do it because we're worried that one day this non-Jew might pass away and his heirs will then mistreat the Kitvei HaKodesh. So that's not a Torah prohibition. That would be at most a Derabbanan prohibition. If it's most Derabbanan prohibition, then you can, Rama can say that it's mutter even in this. So that's why Rav Moshe now says, and that's why you have to assume that it's separate factors. Either Eva or loss would be good enough, because once the prohibition is only rabbinic, then even Eva itself, we've seen from many other situations, is once there is a problem of non-Jews even disliking us, which may down the road lead to them trying to damage us, that is enough to allow us to violate rabbinic prohibitions, which assumes all or most rabbinic prohibitions, including this one of putting a mezuzah on a door. It's interesting to me that Moshe does not address the question of if this is a landlord who's putting up a mezuzah for a non-Jew who's only going to rent the apartment, so then that would mean that if the non-Jew ever dies, the heirs don't get the apartment. It's a rented apartment. So if it's a rented apartment, then there would have been, according to Moshe's reasoning, I would have thought there would be room to say that you can put up the mezuzah even without any of the factors that he's worried about, even without hatred, even without loss, because there's no, if the worry is only about the people who come after him, then that's not a worry to think about it, a worry. So Moshe doesn't address that. Moshe says we have this rabbinic prohibition, and therefore he thinks either of these factors would be sufficient to allow dispensing with his worry about putting up a mezuzah for a non-Jew, and we should therefore be allowed to put up the mezuzah for the non-Jew. The fact that the worry is so distant, Moshe says, is he thinks why the Rama also allows doing it even for the worry about loss of money. Until now, we've been worried about the fact that Eva, hatred of by the non-Jew, would lead to damage to Jewish life or immediate damage to our lives. It would be like a pikuach nefesh situation. Here, the Rama is allowing it even, in Moshe's reading of the Rama, is allowing it even if it's only a monetary issue, right? Even if they're going to damage us monetarily, that's allowed. Moshe thinks that's because whatever the prohibition is, even if we categorize it as rabbinic, it's also a distant prohibition. It's also a prohibition that is only worried about not the immediate treatment of the mezuzah, but way down the road somewhere, how the mezuzah will be treated. And therefore, Ladina, Rav Moshe says, he thinks if the non-Jew is going to leave because of Eva, he'll be annoyed with the Jew, and that's why he's not going to rent the apartment. And one way to tell that would be that if he'll go and rent an apartment from a non-Jew, so he rents it from a non-Jew, the non-Jew's not going to put up a mezuzah for him. So it means that, meaning, if a non-Jew comes to a Jewish landlord and says, I want to rent an apartment, but I want you to put up a mezuzah for me. And the Jew says, I'm really, really sorry. I can't put up a mezuzah for you. It's against my religion to put up a mezuzah for you. And the non-Jew is going to go from there and rent an apartment from a non-Jew with no mezuzah. It'll show that his refusal to rent the apartment from the Jew without a mezuzah is because he's annoyed and upset by the Jew's refusal to put the mezuzah for him. That would be the Eva situation. So if, Rav Moshe is saying, if the Jew has reason to believe that the non-Jew is going to have hatred for him, such as he'll go off and rent another apartment without a mezuzah. So it's not like the non-Jew is insistent on having a mezuzah. He wanted a mezuzah because he knew Jews have mezuzahs, and he wanted the Jew to put a mezuzah for him. And the Jew's decision not to put up a mezuzah for him will be a factor in him having annoyance. Then you'd be allowed to put up the mezuzah for him. But if he says he knows of another Jew who is willing to put a mezuzah for him, so then there's no Eva problem. It's that he wants a mezuzah so much, he's not willing to live without in an apartment without a mezuzah if he knows he can get one. And there, Moshe thinks it would be not allowed for this Jew to put up the mezuzah. Of course, it's unclear how he's going to find a Jew to put up a mezuzah for him if they all listen to Rav Moshe's psak. But there are Jews who won't listen to Rav Moshe's psak. So if this non-Jew can find another Jew who will rent an apartment to him with a mezuzah, so Rav Moshe thinks this particular Jew should not be doing so, because then there's no Eva, there's no hatred there. And in terms of the loss of the rent, right, this Jew will not now have a tenant for the apartment, he doesn't think that's good enough to allow it. Unless he says, if this is the only tenant this guy can find. So that question is an interesting one that Rav Moshe can't define further here. But you get the question, let's say I have an apartment for rent. A non-Jew comes and says, I know of another Jew who will rent me an apartment with a mezuzah. I'm happy to rent from you, but I need a mezuzah on the door. Rav Moshe said, well, he has another Jew who can rent him with a mezuzah, which means, therefore, there's no Eva issue. It's not going to be a hatred issue. And the loss of money isn't significant. But let's suppose I don't know of another tenant. How long would I have to bear this lack of tenant for? Rosh says, and if I'm not going to find another tenant, I think there is room to allow it, because then there's a loss of money involved. But what if, I have no idea, what if this is the first tenant person who came along? It could be that if I leave it on the market, I'll find another tenant tomorrow. It could be I'll find another tenant next week. I'll find another tenant in a month, in 2 months. It's unclear in Rav Moshe as to the definition of the loss of money that would be involved that would allow it. But if there is a loss of money involved, Rav Moshe does fundamentally think that we could rent to the Jew, to the non-Jew, and put up the mezuzah for the non-Jew. If that is for the non-Jew a condition of being willing to rent the apartment from us, then he needs a mezuzah on the door. And all this, by the way, in terms of loss of money, is only if that's the way this Jew makes his living. That's another blurry term. Let's suppose a man has a job, he makes $50,000 a year at the job, and he also has an investment property that he rents out, and that provides another, $12,000 a year. So at what point do we say that is part of his parnassah, part of his livelihood, and what point do we say it's not part of his livelihood? That's a question that Rav Moshe doesn't fully define either, but it's relevant here because Rav Moshe thinks it. So if somebody is struggling along because in his community $62,000 is what it takes to live, so his $50,000 a year job in fact doesn't really support him, that'd be one situation. At the other extreme, let's say the man makes $20 million a year and $12,000 a year off of this apartment, then I could hear Rav Moshe saying, well, he doesn't really need it, and therefore that's not considered a significant enough loss to allow putting up the mezuzah for the non-Jew, where there's no problem of Eva, of the non-Jew, having annoyance or hatred over the refusal. That would be the other extreme. Where in the middle it comes out, Rav Moshe doesn't quite define it, but he says it's got to be an issue of parnasa, of the person's livelihood. And then Rabbi Greenblatt had said, what about putting up a mezuzah that's not valid? So if it's not valid, it's not a problem for Maharil, because we haven't really put up a mezuzah for him. And on the other hand, he might think that he's getting a mezuzah and he'll be happy and it'll all work out, everybody will be happy. So Rav Moshe completely rejects the idea, thinks it's obviously not allowed. There's more in Kulin on Tzadidal than where Shmuel says, we're not allowed to fool, let alone lie, but we're not allowed to fool, to be gonev da'at abriot, a filunachri, even a non-Jew. We are not allowed, except for exceptional circumstances where they've done something wrong that allows it, we're not allowed to mislead them, we're not allowed to cheat in any way, even if it's not an actual lie. We're not allowed to cheat other people, because we're not allowed to do that, because it's part of the way we understand how Jews are supposed to act. We're supposed to be honest and above board, and that people can trust what we say and what we do is what we claim to say and do. And after all, when the non-Jew doesn't want a mezuzah, he wants a mezuzah like Jews have. And in his understanding, this non-Jew's understanding, and Hashem protects people because of the mezuzah, and that would only be because of a kosher mezuzah. And therefore, you have to, if you're going to do it, in the situation where Rav Moshe says it's allowed, it has to be a valid mezuzah. So Rabbi Greenblatt had found the Sefer Yad Sha'ul. It said that you're writing it as a kameah for them, that it's really sort of like an amulet. It sees a protective charm, and therefore, as long as they think it's a protective charm, it's okay. Rav Moshe thinks it's not true. It's wrong. And not only is it wrong, he says, given his reconstruction of the Maharil's reasoning that the worry is that the non-Jew will one day mistreat the Kitvei Kodesh, Rav Moshe says you haven't saved anything, you haven't gained anything, because you're also not allowed to mistreat Kitvei Kodesh, holy writings, sanctified writings, even if they're in fact puzzle. They still have to be, even if they're not fully valid, they still have to be treated with the proper sanctity. And therefore, Moshe says, not only isn't it allowed, you also don't gain anything by it, because it doesn't solve the problem of the worry that we had. So, on the question of writing mezuzot for non-Jews, which a paragraph in the Ramah seems to say is not allowed, and gives two reasons for it, and would see, and gives two ways there would be an exception, two ways that you get to an exception, that the non-Jew would have hatred and would damage. Just it sounds like and. Your motion fundamentally was, it's really an or. It's either one of the conditions allows it, but with a difference that the Ava one, the hatred one, only allows derabanans, whereas the decision to immediately, if the reaction were to be immediately damage us and immediately take revenge on us, that allows even Torah prohibitions. Question is, what's the prohibition with putting a mezuzah for a non-Jew? There was some room to say it was a Torah prohibition of the worry of mistreating Kitvei Kodesh, sanctified writings. Most think that's untrue because the non-Jew who's asking to put it up, there's no reason to think that the non-Jew will mistreat it because he wants it for the purpose of protecting his home. So the worry Rav Moshe had thought was the longer-term worry that down the road another non-Jew would take occupancy here, and that non-Jew would mistreat it. That's a rabbinic prohibition. Therefore, Moshe thinks one would be allowed to put it up, even just for the worry of Ava, that this non-Jew will dislike us or be upset with us. One evidence of that would be that if this non-Jew would be willing to rent another apartment without a mezuzah, then it would mean that if he refuses to rent this one, it's because we said we wouldn't put it up, not because he's so adamant about getting a mezuzah, and that would be an Ava issue. And these are some of the issues that Moshe Feinstein raised in terms of putting up a mezuzah for a non-Jew. And this is a responsible day for the 7th of Av. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.